Las Vegas. Good morning.
Wow, hey, they're awake.
That's not bad. I guess you didn't party too much last night.
Don't worry, it'll get worse. We're going to ask you that every morning this week. We'll see how you do on Wednesday.
So I'm Carl Franklin.
This is Richard Campbell.
We're the .NET Rocks guys. You heard of our show? Oh, come on. You heard of .NET Rocks? All right, well, those who haven't, you'll be schooled here before you leave. We just have a couple of points to talk to you about. First of all, the raffle. Sorry about last night. We didn't mention it. But as you come in, you're supposed to drop your raffle cards in a box. And then the following day, the winners get posted on the board. The winner of the raffle gets posted on the board. And we didn't mention it last night.
Right. And
sorry.
Last night's winner is now up on the board. And thanks to everyone who stuck around and didn't kill the staff. Because we don't have replacements. We need those people. So I appreciate that. But so today's raffle, which hopefully you've dropped your cards already. If you haven't, drop them on the way out. Yeah. The winner will be posted tomorrow morning.
And the prize, I think, is some electronic geeky gadget or something like that. Yeah, we don't know exactly what it is. But
it's always cool stuff. Do you know about the closing session? Jumping all the way to the end? So stick around to the end of the show, because the closing session is when Carl and I do the 64-bit question.
It's a quiz show.
And we give away good loot. So there'll be lots of stuff to be given away right at the end of the show.
But not without humiliating you first.
There's a little bit of teasing involved.
It's fun.
Twitter. We're all on the Twitters. So hashtag dev intersection, hashtag SQL intersection, hashtag angle brackets, hashtag SP intersection.
So we're trying to get the speakers to interact more with you while you're here. And we're going to set an example tonight. Last night we had something to do. But tonight we're going to be out in the casino, probably in a bar. We'll say where we are on Twitter if you want to come have a drink with us, and we're going to encourage the speakers to do the same. So don't be shy. Just meet up. Just go where they are. Have a drink. Sit down. Have a conversation. That's why you're here, to mingle, to meet, to network. The intersection of you and the speakers. It's good.
And during the day in the expo hall, there's a whiteboard area. So some chairs, some markers, whiteboards. So if you want to work on an idea with some cohorts or meet some of the speakers that are going to be hanging out there and work through some thinking, we're all set up to do that, so you can hang out there as well.
All right. Are you ready to get going? Are you ready? All right. Let's bring on our keynoter, Mr. Steve Guggenheimer.
Steve.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thank you. All right, thanks, man. All right, good morning, everybody. Thanks for being here bright and early and joining us. I appreciate the opportunity to kick this off. I've been around Microsoft for about 20 years. My name is Steve Guggenheimer. Most people call me Googs. You can find me at Steven Googs. And at this point in my career, I get the opportunity to work with people who build applications, which is pretty much everyone. So I have the job of trying to take all the things that we're working on as a company and sort of filtering those out and giving a top-level view, and then working with folks on different opportunities, different ways to work together. So what I thought I'd do this morning is sort of walk you through all the different pieces we're working on, how it connects back to developers, and really do the 20,000-foot, let me try and tie all the pieces together. Turns out we work on a lot of stuff. Sometimes it's hard to keep track of it all. Sometimes it's hard to see how it all connects. To be fair, it doesn't always all connect, but we're working on that too. And so that's the goal for this morning. We'll take about an hour. We'll do some demos. And hopefully you guys will enjoy it. Now, to kick this off, we are in Vegas. It is near Halloween. Xbox One is coming, so it just seemed appropriate to start with a video, and this one sort of hit the note for me.
Imagine me and you, I do. I think about you day and night. It's only right to think about the girl you love and hold her tight. So happy together.
Rated M for mature.
Only on Xbox One.
All right, you guys gotta like that one. Gotta start somewhere. At any rate, I promise only one other gratuitous Xbox One video. It's just too much fun at this time of the year. All right, so let's dive in. When I go out and talk with folks, lots of different conversations. Let me start with some of the questions I get right off the bat. So let's just clear the air today and get these out of the way. Yes, we are gonna have a new CEO. No, I don't know who it is, so it doesn't help to ask. I used to use Ladbrokes to find out where the rankings were, but they seem to have taken that site down. Steve is still fully engaged. I get lots of mails from him still. So business as usual. I expect a very smooth transition. Steve is a very, very dedicated 30-year employee who will spend a lot of time on it, and that's sort of where we are on that one. On the org on the far right side, this one's pretty interesting. We did a big reorg. I was at dinner last night with some folks, and they were wondering who's where. Lots of positives in this. As the guy that gets to work with developers, little things like bringing the Windows Phone team, the Windows 8 team, and the Xbox platform team together, if you think about writing apps, that's going to make it better over time. Taking the Azure team and the folks that run all of our data centers and bringing those together, it's going to make things easier over time. Skype, Office, etc. So some of the things that have been done in this reorg are quite positive relative to how we're going to interact and build things for you to build on top of. So I'm very positive on it. It hasn't settled all the way. It's still working its way through, but you'll see even as I go through Phone and Windows 8 today, the beginning of it, and you can only imagine we're going to do more to make things better, both for our own partners internally that build on our platforms, but for all of you as well. And then last but not least,
we're in the process of a little bit of a hardware acquisition on Nokia's side, their devices division. It's not done yet, so they still operate as an independent company. There's nothing we can do together at this point in time. They had a killer launch last week of some new hardware. I don't know when it closes, but you should, you know, assume when it does, then things move forward. So those are sort of the three big things since last time I got up to a major audience and the questions I get all the time. Those are clear.
No further answers, but at least I sort of tried to cover top level. In terms of talking with application builders, I end up typically having two conversations. I'll throw a third one in there.
Yeah.
There's a set of folks, in particular in the commercial side, that have built applications, typically behind the firewall. Lots of them come from the client-server model. And in that case, there's lots of conversations about either enabling new devices or moving pieces to the cloud or somehow reusing some of that code and figuring out how to work with us and others relative to how to go forward. We'll cover a little bit on .NET today. I'm going to be a little bit more forward-looking on the devices and services side, but we'll make sure we draw that bridge because that's one complete conversation. A second conversation is with organizations or people who've never built clients, or they've only ever built device applications or store applications or built for the cloud and could care less about that older stuff and don't want to have that dialogue. We have the interesting opportunity to have a conversation with both audiences because they're both important to us. We work with both of them. It turns out they cross more than they think, but it's not uncommon to walk into a large organization and have an IT person with his dev person sitting there and a marketing person and have two completely different conversations. And in fact, those two don't connect very well at all. And so that's the two broad conversations. I'm going to spend most of my time today on devices and services. We'll link back to .NET in particular in the demos, but I want to make sure in terms of the questions we get asked a lot and the place a lot of the dialogue is going, it's going in that direction. I want to make sure we spend time there. The other one, just for completeness, people who build large integrated applications, think Office, think Adobe, think Autodesk, think Intuit and others, that's a third conversation, which is I got a big chunk of code, desktop mode, I want to keep using it. Do I start moving it all to the store? Do I complement it with services? How do I think about that thing? Because it makes a lot of money still. And that's the third dialogue I end up having. We're going to spend today on devices and services, but I'll make sure for completeness I throw that one out there. Now, on the devices and services side, look, this is the fun part. I mean, devices, they just continue to grow. Roughly 300 million PCs will ship in a year. I don't know, 200 million tablets this year, the analysts keep going. 1 billion smartphones, 2 billion embedded devices. So a couple billion devices will ship today, this year with intelligence in them. That's an interesting opportunity. I looked at some report, I don't remember which one it was, but it was 50 billion devices in another 10 years or so. So each one of us are worth, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 devices each. And so the growth of smart devices keeps going forward. It doesn't make life any easier, because it's not like they all work the same, it's not like they all have the same interface, the same development model, etc. And thus you get into the second half, which is services. If you're going to try and support all of these different devices that are going to keep growing and there's going to be more of them, then using services or using code in the cloud as much as you can, whether it's data or any of the other components, is and then just doing the UI on the local device, that helps scale. And so there's a natural change in transition that's been going on for a long time. We're deep in the middle of it. For us as a company, we've had to evolve as well. So if you looked at our new organization, we have a devices organization for the folks that build hardware. That platform team, in terms of the devices software, came together. And so that's that Windows, Windows Phone, and Xbox. And then that services is that Azure team. Most of you saw Scott last night. and that GFS component or that data center component. So we've sort of oriented ourselves, and then we have our first-party services, which is Office and Skype and Bing, et cetera. We've oriented ourselves around devices, the platform for devices or the software for devices, and then services and the platform for services. And that's important because that's relative to what we see in the industry and where everybody's sort of going or been, depending on when they started, where we need to end in the same place. It's not going to change. It's not going to slow down. It's like any other transition. It doesn't happen overnight. So when you go out and talk about the cloud or services, you get all kinds of interesting answers depending on where people are. When you talk about devices, it depends on who you talk to. But that transition started a long time ago. We're deep in the middle of it. It's going to keep going. And so for us as a company, we've made some major changes. And I would say for everyone in this room, I know you'll continue down that path as well. That mouse does not work, so I'll stop touching it. All right, we'll try this one. In terms of the dialogue, look, nobody sort of, very few people, when we go out and have a conversation, want to do everything with us at once. So the good news is there's lots of starting points. We could talk about Windows Phone and building a Windows Phone app, or Windows 8 and an 8 app. Some folks, the media folks, they want to talk about Xbox and Xbox One. Some folks want to talk about Bing. Azure's a big conversation. Oftentimes, we'll start working on the back end of an application with Azure and making a change there before we ever do a client side or a store app. Very common. But the trick is help us, or let's get together and have a conversation, because there's likely something we're working on that's interesting to everybody. And at the same time, everything we're working on is not interesting to everybody, or most anybody in that sense. So let's find the right conversation. On the devices side, which is where I want to start today, there's lots of things to talk about. We won't cover them all today. But new experiences, the things we're doing with, for example, user interaction models. So if you want to use touch, great, we've gone a long way there. Stylus, everything we're doing with Kinect in terms of gesture-based software. Voice, which started in the auto PC a long time ago. It's coming into the phone. It's in all the other devices. So lots of interaction models. There's a complete different paradigm in terms of how you interact with the device, how we use the cloud. So experiences is one side. In terms of reaching people, that aggregate volume of PCs, which isn't going to go away, tablets, which continues to grow, smartphones, which continues to grow, both ours and others, that's a huge juncture. And for Microsoft, Windows phones plus Windows tablets slash PCs plus over time Xbox, that's a lot of units. So it matters. It's sort of hard to ignore, and it's not really going to slow down. We're increasing share in phone. Xbox continues to grow. PCs are pretty flat right now. And so we have good reach in terms of that dialogue. Economics. Truth of the matter is economics on store-based apps today aren't that great, right? A few people make a lot of money. Most people make no money, right? About $20 billion gets made in store apps. Just for comparison, traditional, I'll call them large, complicated software titles, SAP, Oracle, Office, games, etc., that's about a $300 billion business. So there's still a long way to go on the economics of store-based applications. We're trying to do as much as we can to be flexible there. So we give back a higher percentage of the revenue that's earned in the store to developers. If you wanted to bring your own commerce platform, we let you do that versus using ours. We have one as well. No other platform lets you choose your commerce platform. If you want to bring your own ad engine for in-app ads, we let you do that. Nobody else lets you do that. You can use ours. You can use someone else's. So we're trying to be flexible on the economics because over time, we've got to make that category better. There's going to be a lot of unhappy people over time, and a few happy ones, relative to the overall store economics if we can't move that whole category up. So we try and have a lot of flexibility there. And then using what you know in terms of development, I'll come back to this. So there's a lot of starting points on the device side. If you look, you know, at recently, we've had a couple of announcements. We had the Windows Phone Update 3 go out, which is a small update, but some good features. And then Windows 8.1 just shipped. Hopefully most of the folks in this room have downloaded it. If not, I'll encourage you at the end of this session. But my gauge for how we're doing on the device side in particular is new hardware coming out. Because the OEMs, if the OEMs aren't betting on the platform, then we have a collective challenge. I ran the OEM division before this role for the 5 years, so I've got lots of history on the hardware side. I love it. We've got great new hardware coming out this holiday. Nokia just did a big show last week in Abu Dhabi. Right, they announced a phablet or a 6-inch phone. They did their own RT Slate device, which is beautiful. I've seen it. I've had a chance to play with it. There's a ton of new PCs coming out. Intel's pushing hard on this 2-in-1 concept, which means devices that you can pull apart, fold, flip, do whatever with. Is it a tablet? Is it a PC? Those are getting better. As the processors get better, thinner, lighter weight laptops with touch. 4K, 2K screens. Panasonic's got a beautiful all-in-one battery-operated, you can carry it around, 4K, 2K. Those screens are beautiful. And one thing where everybody's going to get to think about, whether they want to or not, is sort of, what does a 1080p app look like on a 4-inch screen versus a 20-inch screen? Because touch targets change, everything changes. So there's a bunch of work to do over time to deal with these higher resolution displays and all of the different sizes. So hardware is coming. Last year was a good year for Windows 8, but it was the first year. You'll see more touch in terms of the devices this year at holiday, in particular the laptops. When you think about touch, that lends itself more to store apps. So that's a natural momentum point. On the phone side, the phablet's really cool, but if you haven't played with the 1020 that comes from Nokia with the camera on it, that's a game changer, just in terms of what it's capable of. That marriage of hardware and software, that's really what, in the end, works for everyone. And that really, really high-resolution camera with the software they put into it, the lenses, whether you're doing panoramas, whether you're doing just really high-definition shots, whether you're doing quick frames, whether you're doing photosynth work. So digital lenses with the hardware, really cool stuff. Right, so find a Microsoft person if you haven't seen one of the 1020p's, play with it, take a picture. So we're starting to see the hardware coming, and to me that's the precursor on the device side. Right, we're not done, still need lots of cool devices, but if we want to talk about momentum, that's the starting point. Let me spend a little time on 8.1. Raise your hand if you've actually downloaded or used 8.1. Give me a sense. That's pretty good. There's about 3/4 of you that still have to do it. So we'll talk about that later. In terms of 8.1, we did a lot of stuff. If you looked at the development for Windows 8, it sort of had a 4-year dev plan, and we had 3 years to do it. So we did the 3 years a great change in terms of the operating system. And, you know, new chips, really hard work to do. New development model, really hard work to do. A whole bunch of new hardware capabilities, new software, new UI, a lot of work. We knew, though, that when we were done, there'd be some more things to finish. There were some new chips coming, so we had some hardware to do. We knew we'd get feedback from developers on API sets. We knew we'd get some user experience feedback. So instead of finishing 8, doing a planning cycle, then a dev cycle, then a test and ship, we just kept, you know, developing and taking the feedback as we went along. So we ended up with a pretty big release, and it covers all of the above. New developer capabilities, some of the new hardware that's coming out this fall uses new chips that were enabled by this release, new user experience. So let me cover just a couple things if you haven't seen it. The start screen. The start screen is pretty cool today at 8, but with 8.1, making it simple to have an animated background, making it simple to do a natural photo rotation, so it's just a photo viewer if you wanted it to, is kind of cool. The ability to have it run applications from the start screen, so if you get a Skype call, you don't have to log in to take the Skype call. Similar to using a Windows phone, being able to take a picture without having to log in first. Those things are handy. If you go into just the UI, different tile sizes, so larger tiles, smaller tiles, makes it easier to personalize. Turns out people like to do that. And for a developer, having that larger tile, if you're building an app, to be able to put more information in. Again, people who do media content or rich content, they want to be able to show pictures. That's a really useful tile size. Plus, you can do some programming of the tile now. App share the screen. We did this snap mode in Windows 8. It was a nice start. It was kind of hard to work with and not great. So now we have the ability to sort of make apps any size you want. So you can take half the screen, a third of a screen. If I've got two big monitors, I can lay out six apps in a row. So that's much better than the snap view was. Deep SkyDrive integration. And you're going to see more about this over time. But little things, obviously, like being able to roam state of an app is interesting. And as an app developer, you can use SkyDrive for that. For me, I used to run hardware, so I change machines a lot and play with them. Having my screen, my personalized home screen, roam with me, so when I build a new machine and I log on, all my apps are laid out. Holy crud, that's a time saver. So little stuff in terms of that SkyDrive integration, and that's going to get better. You'll see more over time. We're already doing things with phone. So the ability to roam over time apps, app state, that could get to be very interesting. Rich Bing integration, using Bing, right, and the engine behind it to help us power information. So little things like searches obviously makes a big difference because you can use all the information. But when I talk about the store, one of the things we can do with the store, and developers care a lot about what's going on in the store because it's placing the apps up front, being able to use Bing to do a better job personalizing the store for each individual and seeing what their friends are looking at and what apps map to other apps, that's super useful. And so having Bing now as integrated into the OS as we can, and in terms of providing knowledge, is very useful. And we'll see that, I think, most on the developer side, on the store side. On the store, we redid the UX. When I think about the store for Windows 8, I think about Costco. Got a big warehouse, lots of aisles, and we worked on filling it with applications. But if you said merchandising, like, hey, there's a nice layout to the store and it's easy to find things, or promotions, we hadn't done as much. Windows 8.1, we've really worked on the merchandising. The tile itself for the store, you're starting to see some text in it. Over time, you'll see us actually be able to put apps there and use that as a marketing tool in terms of helping people know what apps are available. If you've asked for an app, we can help highlight it sooner. We're going to have bigger, richer content up front. We've gotten to a cleaner UI and layout. We can, again, use Bing to help us power recommendations for you. You can check things that, hey, that's not interesting to me, and make the engine smarter about recommending apps. One of the challenges is, even with our store, it's 100,000 plus apps, it's hard to know what's in there. You know, even our own RSPs, et cetera. So doing a better job of knowing individuals based on what they've looked for, what they search for, what they've looked for in the store, we can do a better job there. And when I talk to the people who build apps that go in the store, they care a lot about that merchandising. One other thing I'll highlight there, just because I'm on it, is the other area is cash stored value cards. Going into a store and being able to either offer or buy a card that you can buy apps from and give those as gifts is interesting. The second thing is the OEMs are doing a lot at this holiday. When I buy a new machine, to put a card with it that has, let's say, $25 worth of app credits so you can buy apps, those are part of the ways, again, to kickstart the momentum for downloading apps from the store. So we're going to do more in that area over the holiday. I'll leave the rest of this, but a lot going on in terms of Windows 8.1, the user experience, how we're laying it out, et cetera. On the development side, I would just say, look, touch first. Devices are going to go more and more touch. I think a lot of people think of the traditional PC. In fact, most folks I talk to think about desktop. They don't even say PC. They're sort of desktop mode, and then there's everything else, which is mobile devices. The desktop will continue to be there. It's an important part of the system. It's an important attribute and asset that we have. But more and more devices are going to go touch. Making apps work great on touch takes a little bit of work. And so when I think about store apps and the direction we're going on, that's one of the key attributes. And again, higher resolution screens, more of them being touch, is one of the directions. That integrated store and downloading apps from the store, look, good, bad, or indifferent, that's the nature of the beast. Now, behind the firewall, that can be managed and sideloaded from within the organization, but it's still a method for getting applications. And the store is going to continue to grow over time. I think it's going to be the natural default. Even behind the firewall, we have a tool that basically creates an internal store. We run that at Microsoft. I forgot what our IT folks named it. But it's basically the private store for Microsoft apps. I think most organizations will go there. And so that's going to be the direction. So getting used to that, getting in that direction is important. Existing code and skills, we're going to demo a little bit of this. Let me just, you know, I'll highlight one of the things we really worked hard on with Windows 8, and we've continued with 8.1, is trying to enable as broad a range of existing applications or existing skills as possible. So if you're a DX, C++ game developer, we love you, we support it. If you're a XAML C# developer and that's how you code, we love you, we support that. If you're an HTML5 JavaScript developer, we love you, we support that. And you'll see when I talk about phone, we've started to do some of that core components, getting them closer together. So it turns out there's about 25% API commonality between phone and PC, and that's some of the core parts. In fact, the DX support in C++ was the first place we started, because that means it helps getting games running across both platforms and makes that easier. So we're going to continue to work on the broadest set of skills or capabilities over the broadest set of devices. And it's not perfect today. It's not. But over time, we can do better, and we've begun that work. Having a common kernel between phone and PC might not seem, you know, like a ton today, but over time, it's going to get more and more important. It's going to make it easier and easier to build for multiple devices, which over time, most of the feedback we get from developers and people who build apps is how hard it is to build for so many different devices, in particular if they're changing all the time or not in sync. And so that's an area that we'll continue to focus on. The one other area I want to highlight on this one is, in terms of tablets, because tablets have become sort of their own category, though I sometimes argue what a two-in-one is. But the tablet space is one where we don't have as much traction as I'd like from Microsoft. We've got more work to do. There's a bunch of great 8-inch devices coming this holiday. We're doing more work there. But when I go out and we do a little survey with IT folks and people in the organization, both developers and IT, they prefer to have a Windows tablet if they could get going with one. And so one of the things we've worked hard on, and one of the things with Windows 8 you'll see, is more and more of the devices coming. They want to use a Windows device because, frankly, they built a lot of code for Windows apps. They have existing apps that they'd like to use. They know how to manage Windows devices. They know how to secure Windows devices. They know how to do login for Windows devices. They know how to manage them. And whether it's partially managed or whichever model you want to use, even if it's bring your own device, that ability to reuse code, reuse management, reuse security, identity, et cetera, is pretty important. So while we haven't sort of, you know, hit the ball out of the park or we're anywhere close on tablets, I think the energy's there, and you're going to see more great hardware this year, and it's a natural cycle relative to IT shops. And we're starting to get there. Delta just did a big rollout. They use Jeppesen, which is the in-flight bag application for pilots. They wanted to be able to use Windows devices in the cockpit so that they could have the best of their existing apps, because they got lots of them, and be able to take advantage of a modern touch UI, which is what their pilots wanted, so they could be more hands-free. So I think it's something like 60, I don't know. It's tens of 10,000 plus, you know, tablets going into Delta Airlines. They're using the Jeppesen flight bag. We're starting to see other requests. So we're starting to see that natural gravity as the apps come along and the devices come along towards using Windows-based tablets in those environments. On the phone side, I talked about shared core with Windows 8. That's a big deal, right? The networking stack, IE is the same between the phone and the PC. DX support, C++, we wanted to go after gaming first, right? It's about 25, 27% of the APIs. You can imagine now that the phone team and the Windows team and the Xbox team are in the same group, it might be logical to think about how we could continue down that path. So that's good stuff. The programming model's obviously the same. The other thing that I think is important is the user experience is consistent, right? The notion of live tiles, the different sizes of the tiles, laying them out. We have an opinion in this space, which is the UI or the user experience. Not everyone may agree with it, but we've set out a very clear model. Even in Xbox, we're starting to use the same one. And I think if you look across the three models, it's pretty clear. Apple basically does a complete control of hardware and software. So as a developer, when you build for Apple, you know it's going to run on their devices because there's no, you know, randomization of the device hardware. It's very, very clear and very clean that way. There's no hardware opportunity, though, for people who build hardware. So that part's a little odd for that whole part of the business. Android's the other end. They'll let you build whatever hardware you want. You can change chips, you can change graphics, you know, you can do whatever you want in that stack. But then as a developer, it gets hard to write for because it's not clear that things are going to run on all the devices that get out there. And as it proliferates, it gets harder. We try and sort of run in the middle. We try to have enough consistency of the development environment, the hardware, and the user experience that when a user uses a device, they know how to use it. And when a developer writes an app, we can guarantee it'll work on all the devices. That's our goal. And so those are the three models. You can decide, you know, which ones you like more or less. I think we're farther along, though, as a result of being in this path for a long time and moving to a common kernel, in terms of having more consistency for developers across more devices. We're not perfect. There's a seam between our phone and our tablet slash PC and Xbox, but it's a smaller seam than there is across an iOS device and a Mac, and it's more or less of a seam than there is across Android and any PC because the Chromebook's a different animal. So we have the lowest seam between devices today, and that's going to get better over time. The user experience is consistent, so when you walk out and see the devices, folks like Nokia now, they got a phone, they've got a phablet, they've got a slate, so you're starting to see that come across. Samsung does a nice job across the devices as well. So I think you'll see the model continue to grow, and we've had developers start to play with this. This is sort of a graphic picture of it, but you know, Push BI is an app where the application now runs smoothly across the PC, tablet, and phone. And the UI has been done to naturally work and give you the right information for a phone versus a tablet versus a PC, right? And we're going to see more of this over time. Another category, Bank of America. I play with this one all the time. They do a nice job of having the same app essentially reusing a bunch of the core skills and code and having that app show up on all three devices. That user experience is consistent across all of them. Now, in terms of productivity, Angry Birds, of course, same note. And here you'll notice I threw the TV in because with Xbox I can do the same thing. And so we're starting to get that coalescence of great experiences across devices with less work than it used to take to make them more and more consistent. We're not there, but we're farther along than others, and I think we're moving faster in that particular direction. One of the things I always look at is I look at apps that get built and try and get a sense for what our partners are saying. And so we're starting to get there. Foursquare is an interesting case. Dennis Crowley and the guys in New York, that's a pretty popular app. They built it for the Windows tablet first. They didn't build it for iOS tablets or Android tablets. They built it for Windows because they have a phenomenally rich user set of data-driven information, crowdsourced, pictures, reviews, people, etc. And they wanted a rich canvas to lay it out. Turns out Windows 8 has the best user experience model for doing a very graphical, touch-based user model for this. And so they think about it like a coffee table book. All right, it's a great demo. If you haven't played with the app, it's a beautiful application on Windows. Looks great, works great, and they started with Windows. That has a lot of credibility when you go down to the Valley and start talking to folks about Windows and what's different and why did you choose it. So we're starting to get those apps that are unique on Windows that help tell the story about what's capable there. Another one in India is the rail system. Turns out if you go to India and take the train, which lots of people do, their website implementation for buying tickets is not so good, tends to break a lot. They wanted to build an app. They chose Windows first because Windows is a platform they know will grow over time. It's sort of the default in terms of PCs today in India. They know it'll continue to grow, so they were another one that chose Windows first. There's some other fun ones that we announced recently. Slingbox. I'm a Slingbox user. I'd like to use the app versus the web, so that's a good, good addition. Temple Run 2, FIFA 14, a couple of great games. Vine, we just announced for Windows Phone. And in case you missed it last week, at a Nokia World, or whatever the conference was called in Abu Dhabi, we've got Instagram. I've seen the app up and running. It's going to be great. Those guys have done a great job between their design language and making it work great for Windows, so it's nice to see Instagram come along. That's a request. Let me tell you, as a parent of a 15-year-old and 16-year-old, I can tell you every app we don't have for Windows that a 15 or 16-year-old would ask you about, games included. So this one's on there. I got to check one off of the list. So as dads go, I get good days and bad days. And as the guy on the app side, some of the days are more bad than good right now. So we're getting there bit by bit. I thought we'd take a pause here and maybe do a couple demos. So I'm going to ask my colleague Robert Green to come on out and join us. A couple things we wanted to do is, when we talk about building device apps, there's a couple ways to start, and I wanted to make sure we do a good job between web-based apps, .NET apps, sort of giving a grounding in some of the things that we're offering today, because moving to store-based apps is part of where we're all going. So how do we do it? Robert, now there he is. All right. Come on up. You take over. I'll get out of your way. Nice to see you. All right.
Hi, everybody.
Say good morning to Robert. Come on, guys. Make him feel warm. There we go.
Thank you. My machine went to sleep. I assume that's not a reflection of what it thinks about the job Steve's doing.
That's not nice.
If it is, I suspect I'm getting a new computer.
Or a new job.
All right. New job. Uh-oh. Speaking of jobs.
So I'm a developer, and my senior management has told me we need to take our existing website and make a Windows Store app out of it. And then when we're done with that,
we need to take our existing desktop apps, and we need to move those forward. And, of course, the first words out of my mouth are, yeah, no problem, I can do that, while the voice in my head is saying, oh, snap. So I wonder how daunting a task this is. Let's go find out. So here's a website, Khan Academy. A lot of you are probably familiar with. It's got a huge amount of content devoted to educating the world. It's a great app. It's very touch-friendly, running it in the browser. So let's say I want to learn something. Let's go learn something about science, maybe healthcare and medicine. There's a lot of great content in here. I can go learn about the heart, and I can meet the heart, and I can watch videos, and I can learn. I can look at the layers of the heart, and when I've learned all about the heart, I can take the heart quiz and test my knowledge. Okay, so now, this is a great application that we want to have in the Windows Store. Now, Khan actually has a store app, so let's launch the existing store app. And again, it's touch-friendly. I can tap on science, or I can click on science. Are we working? Again. There we go. Healthcare and medicine. Exact same content shared between the website and the store app. Here's the heart. Again, I can meet the heart, play videos. But notice at the bottom here, there's no heart quiz. So the app currently doesn't have the quizzes or the exercises. So what I want to do is add to this app exercises. Okay, so that's the job I've been handed. So let's go into Visual Studio. I actually have the Khan Academy app in Visual Studio. I have their source code, and my job is going to be to add exercises and quizzes to this. So this is a Windows Store app targeting Windows 8.1, and it is a JavaScript app, so it's got HTML and JavaScript and CSS and a whole bunch of pages like that. Now what I'm going to do is add some exercise content. So I have added all of these HTML files and the equivalent JavaScript files representing the various quizzes. Now, I didn't create this content from scratch. All of this is coming from the Khan website because they've actually made their entire website content available for free for people to get. So I went to GitHub and I downloaded their content So these are the same HTML files that are on the website. And then what I've done here is I've got the heart quiz HTML. So again, just completely reusing, reusing my HTML skills. And now, when I run this app, what I want to do is I've added this exercises button. When I tap this button, I want the heart quiz to show up. So let's see how I do that. So what I want to do is display this HTML in the Windows Store app. So what I'm going to use for that is a WebView control. Now, XAML has had WebView controls all along. Windows 8 had them, 8.1 continues to have them. But new in Windows 8.1 is a WebView control for JavaScript apps. And with the WebView control, you can display web content. So I'm going to load up a WebView control, and then here's the JavaScript code that is going to get a reference to that WebView control and load that heartquiz.html page. So now, when I run this app, and I tap try an exercise, there's the heart quiz. So I'm sharing the exact same code from the website and into the Windows Store app. So I don't have to have two separate code bases. I don't have to recreate everything from scratch. I'm using the exact same content. And then it's pretty straightforward using the web view to add this content into my Windows Store app. That's pretty cool. All right, let me show you another way to do this. So let's go to another website. This is the CK12 Foundation site. This is a nonprofit that is devoted to educating students, so there's a huge amount of STEM content on here, mathematics, science, etc. So I can tap life science, and I can view the various content in here. So if I want to go learn about cell biology, there's content and information on cell biology. So I want to turn this into a Windows Store app as well. So one option, of course, is to get all the content from the website, build a Windows Store app like we did with Khan, use the WebView to point to that content. But let me show you something that we're working on that would make that a little bit easier. So what I'm going to do is create a brand new Windows Store app. It's a JavaScript app. And I'm going to choose the web app template. Now, those of you who have done store apps before are looking at this and saying, web app template, what the heck is that? I haven't seen that. Is that a new feature in Visual Studio 2013? Turns out, no, it's something that we're working on internally. Let me show you what it does. So when I create this new project, notice there's not a lot of code in there. And in the default.html, I'm once again using a web view. So what is the web view pointing to? Well, that's configured in the config.json file. And all I do in here is I've got a base URL, which is the CK12 site. And then I've got buttons to look at help, join, sign in. I just point to pages of the website. And now when I run this, this app is essentially wrapping, if you will, displaying the CK12 site. So here's that site as a Windows Store app with just a handful of lines of code. So this is extremely easy to do. Now, this web app template is something that we're working on internally. This is kind of a sneak preview of it. It's not shipping yet. It's not quite ready yet. Our intention is we're going to release it as open source. It'll be free very soon now, I'm told. So that's just something to look forward to. So that's a couple ways of taking existing websites and making Windows Store apps out of them. The first option, as we saw, is to bring all the existing content into the Store app. The second would be to use this web view, this web app template, and point to an existing app. Now, I should say about the web app template, the intention of this is not that anybody can build a Store app that points to somebody else's website. It's really designed for people that have the website, the guys who own the website, to make a Windows Store app out of that website. Okay, so now I'm looking pretty good in front of management because I've taken our existing websites and turned them into store apps. The other thing I've been asked to do is take our existing desktop apps and move those forwards. So let's go look at a scenario. Okay, so here is an existing Windows Presentation Foundation or WPF app. It's a desktop line of business app that manages expenses. Okay, so let's take a look at what this does. I built this WPF app. It talks to a WCF service that talks to internal SQL Server and gives me the ability to manage expenses. So it shows me I have some outstanding charges, one of which is late, so I'm about to get fined by Amex for that. I can view my outstanding charges. I can add new ones. I can look at reports that are waiting for approval, my past reports, so I can see what's going on. It's a good app. It works great. The users are happy with it, but of course, they want more. What they want is the ability to run this app on additional devices, because right now, it works on my laptop, but they say, well, I want to be able to run this app on my Surface. I want to be able to approve expense reports on my phone. I don't want to just be chained to my desk or chained to my laptop. I want to be able to access this app on multiple devices. So what I want is, what I'm asked to do is build a Windows 8 version of the app and a Windows Phone version of the app. Well, you can build, just as we saw, you can build Windows Store apps using JavaScript. You can also build Windows Store apps using XAML. So let me show you the Windows 8 version of this app. I'm continuing to use MVVM, Model View Model. So I've got XAML. So of course, here's XAML. It's not 100% the same XAML as in WPF, but it's XAML. It's still C#, so I'm reusing a lot of the XAML, I'm reusing a lot of the code, talking to the exact same WCF service, because I can right-click here and add service reference the exact same way I do before. And now when I run this app, here's the Windows 8 version of this. I spent a fair amount of time making this look like a Windows Store app, so it's fast and fluid, it's easy to use, it's very touch-friendly, I can tap to see charges, I swipe up, there's an app bar to create a new charge or to select a bunch of charges so I could then add them to an expense report. If I just want to view a charge, I tap on this. I can make changes to this and save it. I can view pending reports. So completely functional. It's got all the same functionality as the WPF app. It just looks and behaves like a great Windows 8 app. Now, there's a fair amount of code in here because when I reused my XAML and I reused my C#, to be perfectly honest with you, the reuse was really more of the copy and paste variety. So although I have a great working app, I actually kind of have two different versions of the source code and kind of strikes me as being somewhat inefficient. Let's look at maybe something we can do about that. Let's go look at the Windows Phone version of this app, and you'll notice that there's way less code in here. Now, there's two reasons there's way less code in here. First of all, this app's running on the phone, so it's not necessarily going to have all of the same functionality as the WPF app or the Windows 8 app. But secondly, I'm reusing code by using portable class libraries. And a portable class library is a class library you can build that only contains code that can run on multiple frameworks. So if we were going to create one of those, we would create a new project, and we would choose portable class library. And when we did that, we're given this dialog where you can target frameworks. So I'm going to target .NET Framework 4.5 and Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8. And then the code I put in here is only the code that can run across all three of those platforms. Okay, so I'm not going to actually create that because I already did. And let's go back to the WPF app. And we'll see that we have a number of projects here. This expense repository that talks to the service, this model class, and this view model class are all in portable class libraries. So when I build the phone app, I don't need to rewrite that code. I just need to reference it, and then that code comes over. And now when I run this app, it's going to ask me to log in because it's talking to a WCF service. My phone's not domain joined, so I'm going to have to authenticate. There we go. Green at expenses on Microsoft.com. Enter my password. Sign in. Sign in probably works better if I type my password correctly. Mm-hmm. There we go. And the app running on the phone shows me that I have 4 outstanding charges. It shows me that I have a charge that's older than 45 days. Here are the outstanding charges. And if I was a manager and there were expense reports waiting for my approval, I could approve them from here. So what we've seen in these two demos is it's very, very doable to take an existing website and make a Windows Store app out of it, and also very doable to take existing desktop client apps, .NET client apps, and extend those to Windows Phone and Windows 8. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You don't have to write everything twice. There's a huge amount of reuse you have, not only of your existing skills, but also of your code. Steve?
Perfect. We're going to end up building store apps for most of the apps or websites we have. So we're trying to make it as easy as possible and make sure the tools support it. Everything we're doing with Visual Studio, that template that he showed you for taking a website and turning it into an app, we're not quite done with that yet. This is the first time we've shown it in public, but we're working on tools to make it easier. So let me hit a couple other things real quick. In terms of IE, it's the same IE across phone and PC. So going back to that common core, getting to the same NT kernel across both. It loads faster. We built some F12 tooling so that you can debug while you're in the actual site, because it was a pain in the butt before, so we've gotten good feedback on that. Lots of other pieces on IE I'm going to sort of buzz through. Bing I'll just touch on. Not only are we taking Bing and making it as a platform for our own apps, so making it so we can use the entities model in all of our applications or maps or speech to text, but we're opening that up as well. And so, for example, we built an entities API that you guys can take advantage of if you want to use our corpus from Bing when you're doing searches or you're using information in your applications. You can take advantage of that. Again, we do the same thing with maps. We're doing the same thing with speech, with translator, et cetera. So there's a lot of parts to Bing that are very good platform components for client-side applications or for client apps. Last but not least, Xbox One is coming. And I'll do, obviously, another gratuitous video because they're fun. But the one thing to know that I'm not sure is out there, the Xbox One has two engines in it, essentially, or two operating systems. There's the gaming engine for running the super high-quality, beautiful games that we're looking forward to. There's also a Windows 8 engine in there. Now, it's a curated platform, so how we run the business and how we do the rest of it, it's not all determined. But when people say, hey, how would I build an application to run on Xbox One, the simple answer is it's the same underlying platform. And so over time, if you're building a Windows 8 app, a Windows 8.1 app, over time, it's going to get easier or it's going to be more consistent for building something for Xbox One. So there's all, and it's not exactly the same, and it's not open, and we don't do everything, but that underlying piece is the same starting point. So we're doing more and more across that common platform, and we'll do more over time. Now, I'm going to use Xbox One as my transition between the devices side, or device apps, store apps, and services. So again, a little bit of a teaser in terms of where we're going with the device itself.
As you can see, that's an increase of this company.
Xbox On. This is an invitation to a new generation.
Go to Titanfall.
Where your games and entertainment are no longer separated.
Go to Star Trek Into Darkness.
But together, in one.
Xbox Answer.
Did you see that?
This is an invitation from the all-in-one Xbox One.
Yeah, that one's going to be a lot of fun to play with. Again, the 16-year-old test says that will do well. And the 16-year-old test says Titanfall will do well. So I'll give you that gauge point. You don't need any other gauge point other than a 16-year-old male in the household to tell you that one. I'll switch to services. The reason I sort of use that as a transition is when you think about sort of mission-critical back-end services and capabilities, Xbox Live is about a 48 million user network. That's one of the largest networks in the world, subscription networks. And if that thing goes down, we get lots of feedback, in particular from my 16-year-old or anyone else. So the nice thing on that is we run that back end. When you think of Halo launching or you think of Titanfall for Live, we run that on Azure. And so as we switch into services, I think one of the things to talk about in services is part of how you understand or get good at services is by running really world-class large services. Right, consumer services in particular. And if you aggregate all the different services we run, we're basically the second largest service in the world. And so whether it's the 250 million SkyDrive users, the, I forgot what is it, 2 billion minutes per day of Skype usage, Office 365 with 50 million users, Bing with all their queries, the 48 million Xbox Live users, like we run a lot of really large scale consumer services. And that's a phenomenal feedback loop to teaching you how to build a platform for large scale services. Now on the other end of the spectrum, we have a complete commercial capability as well in terms of on-premise services that we've been selling for a long time. So we can marry those two together. Now I mentioned before, you know, the cloud slash services are kind of fun. When you do a survey, you know, you walk on the street and you ask people about the cloud, 29% tell you it's about the weather. And in Seattle, it's a little higher percentage because we have more clouds. 16% get it correct, but 95% of the people out there are connecting to the cloud in one way or the other, and you see lots of examples, banking, shopping, social, et cetera. And again, we run a bunch of services that people may have no idea that are, quote, running in the cloud, but they are. In terms of Windows in the cloud, it's a pretty interesting story. I worked in the server and tools division before OEM, so probably 7 or 8 years ago now. And at that point in time, we were just getting working on Azure, doing some of the initial work. And I would say the development team, Scott included, who was here last night, would have been mostly on-prem first, cloud second, which means we were working on Windows Server, IIS, our management tools, SQL, et cetera, for on-premise usage. And then the cloud was the thing that we added onto it, or were starting to add onto it. In today's world, it's cloud first. Everything we do is cloud first and then bringing it back onto on-prem. And that's a mindset shift, that's a change. It took a little while to get there, but if you look at what's going on with the Azure team and how fast they're revving things now and how much is coming to market, it's quite incredible. And they're doing some phenomenal work there. If I look across the opportunity from building from that model, there's something that I think we looked at 7 or 8 years ago that still holds true today, which is that symmetry between on-prem and cloud. I think that's the core differentiator, you know, that we can offer, and it gets more and more powerful over time. So the ability to take an application, run it on-prem, and then move it into the cloud and have it run the same way, nice. The ability to take an application and split it between on-prem and the cloud, even better. The ability to go back and forth if you want, you know, super useful. So that notion of a public cloud, I'm going to put it all up in the sky or up in the cloud. A hybrid cloud, I'm going to split it across both, or private cloud, I'm going to do it on-prem. The fact that we use the same fundamental infrastructure, right, that we started again with that same kernel and we built on top of it, means things like management, right, you can do them the same way. If you look at Hyper-V, it runs the same on-prem and in the cloud. Visual Studio, you'll see some additions to the development environment while you're here. System Center, identity with Active Directory. I mean, it's a very powerful differentiator. Oracle can allow you to do a lot of things on-prem, not so much in the cloud. Google, Amazon can let you do a lot of things in the cloud, not so much on-prem. Microsoft, we can allow you to go across both sides. And we've worked on that symmetry across the boundaries. And I think that's a very, very powerful differentiator and gives anybody in this room the ability to choose. Because the truth of the matter is there's very few people I talk to say, okay, I'm going to take everything and put it in the cloud, or I'm going to run everything on-prem. It turns out more and more it's a mix. And it's actually not an easy conversation. Some, you know, data integrity, what data do I keep on my, you know, on-prem? What do I put up? What do I move off in terms of running it just in a virtual machine versus what do I want to rebuild and build as a new model? So there's a lot of dialogue there, and that symmetry is a super useful tool. If I look at our cloud infrastructure, we have both infrastructure as a service, which we didn't have for quite a while. So getting that in place has helped a lot. Platform as a service is actually quite good. Common identity, we took Active Directory, we made the cloud-based implementation. I think we'll show a demo of that in a little while. Integration, if you go back to BizTalk, taking BizTalk and putting it in the cloud. Data with what we've done with SQL. Some very powerful tools there. Then our program model and tools is pretty important there. One piece I would add on to this is sort of the open platform side of Azure. We've done a lot of work here, and I don't think most people keep track of it. Within Microsoft, we have a wholly owned subsidiary division called Microsoft OpenTech. And they spend all their time working with the open source community. And if you look at what we've done with Azure, we can interoperate via standard protocols, REST, JSON, AtomPub. Identity, we can integrate with Facebook, with Google, with Yahoo, whoever, anybody's doing open identity work. Hadoop, Mango, MySQL, Java, PHP, et cetera, et cetera. So that organization is there to work with the open source community, take our projects and put them out in the community, and get things that are, you know, primarily in the open source community running on Windows or in Azure. Take the most recent example would have been Oracle. So we had an implementation of Java. We now have Oracle, both Oracle VMs running there, as well as a new implementation of Java for our platform. So there's a lot of work that goes on with the open source community that we're dedicated to, that we put folks onto, and I'm not sure we talk about it as much as we should, but I wanted to highlight it. So I needed to transition into the services side of the demo. So I thought I'd use this great example, only because I just couldn't resist the picture. So there's a company building an app that basically puts a Fitbit on a cow. So if you know what a Fitbit is, it tracks what you're doing, it tells you your steps, etc. They essentially have cow Fitbits. And I guess tracking cows, you can learn a lot about what they're doing. And the cow puts out about 200 megabits of information a year. Well, if you take a herd of cows over a year's period and a couple of herds of cows, it's a lot of data. So the starting point is to put this in the cloud. But the interesting thing is, do cows have rights about their data? Turns out if you're in Europe, the cow might have rights. And so the notion of being able to take your cow data and put it up into the cloud and maybe have it cross-border. So let's say the company that's building this is in France and they want to have a cloud capability for Germany. If they put the German cow data in the French cloud, they might have problems. Now, whether that should be relevant or not, I have no clue. But the idea that you want certain capabilities from your cloud provider, like the ability to take care of national boundaries and make sure data is secure, the notion that you might want to have a failover point 60 miles away in case of an earthquake, redundancy, there's a whole bunch of things that go into building a cloud infrastructure at scale, including protecting cows' rights, that you guys might not have thought about, but we make sure we try and think about as we build this out. So the Uber notion there is building infrastructure at scale is not a simple task. One of the things we spend a lot of time on, both that on-prem and cloud symmetry, but also in that cloud capability to scale globally. And that's there for everybody to take advantage of. It's easy. We've done a lot in terms of how you do billing, in terms of how you use it, how you scale up, how you scale down, which really does give another capability for everybody in this room and everybody in the world building apps today. With that, I was going to have Robert come back out, and we're going to take that same app we were working on before that was behind the firewall, that nice little .NET finance app, and extend it for the cloud and show you how easy that is and some of the tooling there. So with that, I'd like to ask Robert. There he is. Let's give Robert a hand again. Right. Come on now. Thank you.
Okay. Previously in keynote demo, we took an existing WPF desktop client app and we created a Windows 8 version of it and a Windows Phone version of it. Now we're told we need to move it a little bit forward again because the users, they're happy. They can manage their expenses on their surfaces, they can manage expenses on their phones, but only if they're on-prems, only inside the firewall. So now the employees say, well, what if I want to view my expense reports from the coffee shop or at home or from the casino? So what I want is for this Windows Store app and the WPF app and the Windows 8 app to all be able to be used off-prems as well. So if we're going to do that, then we're going to need to start moving some stuff to the cloud, and that means Azure. So the first thing we are going to need to move is the data, and then we need to move the service into the cloud, and then we need to reconfigure the clients to talk to it. And in the interest of time, I'm going to basically start showing you how to do that, but then show you the end results. I'm giving a talk on Wednesday called Modernizing WPF App, Modernizing WPF Line of Business Apps, and I'll dive into more detail on what we're going to do. So this part of the demo is basically a shameless plug for my talk. Okay, so we have an existing database. And right now I'm using LocalDB. Here's the expenses database. I want to move this to Azure. Two ways I can do that. I can go into the Azure portal and go to my SQL databases and create a new one. So just click New, data services, SQL database, quick create, give it a name, choose a server, whether I have an existing server or a new database server, and create the database. It's as easy as that. But I already have a database, so I don't want to create a brand new one and then have to manually move the data over. So I can do this from inside SQL Management Studio. I can right-click on this database, go to Tasks, and say Deploy Database to SQL Azure. And then all I need to do is log into the server I want to use, which is this one here, ad8etc.database.windows.net. Log in. And then choose the edition of SQL Azure, web or business, choose the size of the database, click Next, and go ahead and publish. Now, I've already done this, so I'm not going to do it twice. And then after I do that, I can actually, inside Management Studio, connect to that. And here's my expenses database with my tables, and I can run SQL queries against this and manage this. So now I've got the data in Azure, and you can see here's this database right here, expenses on this server. Now what I need to do is point my WCF service to it. So let's go into the WCF service, and in the web.config, here's the connections, the current connection string. All I need to do is change the connection string. Well, what's the connection string for a SQL Azure database? Well, I can easily find that by going into the management portal, clicking on the database. Let's click on the correct one. Scroll down here and view SQL database connection strings. So all I need to do is copy this ADO.NET connection string, come back into the service, paste it in as a connection string, and now I'm pointing to the database sitting in Azure. And then all I'd need to do is add my password. Okay? So now, when I run, let's go back and run the WPF app, which is calling the local service, which is talking to the SQL database. Okay, so that's step one. Now the data is in SQL Server and SQL Azure. One nice thing about SQL Azure is it has syncing, so I can sync between the data in SQL Azure and the data in my SQL Server. But the next thing I want to do is I want this service itself to be running in Azure. So what I want to do is publish this to Azure. And I can do that from inside the Solution Explorer by right-clicking on this and publishing it to a website. So I need an Azure website. Again, two ways I can create an Azure website. I can come out to the Azure portal, go to Websites, and create a new website. So just click New, quick Create, give it a name, pick a region, and create it. I can also do this inside Visual Studio. So I'm, of course, running Visual Studio 2013. We've got great Azure tooling in the Server Explorer. I can right-click and connect to Windows Azure, and then I can see my existing websites. And from here, I can right-click and add a new site. I'm going to call it Expenses. Is it Expenses or Expense? Expenses Service. Pick a location. We're in the West. Pick a subscription. And I can also filter my subscription so I can only see the one I'm currently working on. And then create a new website. So Visual Studio is now going out and talking to Azure, creating that website, which takes, as you can see, a very small amount of time. Okay, so now if I come out here and I refresh this page, I can see that, come on, I have a website. Okay, so now all I need to do is come back in here and publish this to that website. So in the Solution Explorer, I right-click, I publish the website, and let's start from the beginning of this wizard. I would import, and so I select the website I want to use, which is Expenses Service, click OK, accept everything here, and publish. And now what we're doing is we're taking this service and publishing it to an Azure website. So there's the Azure website, it's up and running, and then all I need to do is enter the full URL for the service, and I get the familiar test page, so that's good. So now I copy this entire URL, come back to the WPF app and tell it to point to the Azure service. So to do that, all I need to do is come into app.config and here's calling the local service. Here's calling the one I just created. Okay, and now when I run this application, I'm going to be talking to the service on the Azure website, which is talking to SQL Azure. So now I can take this laptop, and anywhere I have internet connectivity, I can talk to that service and the data sitting in Azure, and I've now cloud-enabled this app. And then all I would need to do in the Windows 8 app is point to that service, and in the Windows Phone app, point to that service. This is great. Now, hopefully, you're sitting there, and you're saying, hold on, not so fast. Expense data is a corporate resource. You're just going to make this available on the internet so anybody can talk to? Don't we need to authenticate this? Who here was thinking that? Everybody raise your hand. You're absolutely right. We need to authenticate this. So what we're able to do is authenticate using Azure Active Directory. So we're going to create an Active Directory tenant on Azure, put us all in there, and then we're going to have a version of this app, which is this one here, that is going to authenticate using Active Directory. I'll just show you how that works. Again, we'll look at the code to do this in my talk on Wednesday if you're interested. Now when I start this app, I'm asked to log in using my domain credentials. And now I'm authenticated. So I would add similar code to the Windows Phone app, similar code to the Windows 8 app. So now I have those three apps running on multiple devices, all talking to service in the cloud, all talking to data in the cloud, authenticated using Active Directory. I am done here. Thank you.
All right. So I think the point of symmetry comes through pretty clearly. We started with a .NET application. We made it run on multiple devices in the store. We connected it to the cloud. There's a lot of good work going on here. A couple quick things to close off. You're going to see a lot of Visual Studio 2013, you know, while you're here. We've done a lot for any kind of app you want to build on both the devices side and then a ton of the new services connection. You saw I'm working in Visual Studio against Azure, so that's a real plus for everybody. I won't hit it too hard. The thing I'd sort of close on overall is, look, we spent a lot of time over a lot of years getting to this notion of a common core. In the old days, sort of building a client-server application, we spent time with NT trying to get to the same kernel, so things like management, identity, security, development would all get easier. It took a while, but we got there. And then with .NET, we built on top of that. The work we've done over the last 5 years to get the same kernel now across the phone and the PC and the tablet, it's actually an embedded as well, and then have that symmetry on the cloud side and the on-prem side, we have an incredible amount of a common core that enables development, right, management, security, identity, to get easier across all of the different ways you might enter into an application. And so over time, developing for the Microsoft platform and connecting through open standards and through some of the open source work we're doing to all the other devices and services is going to get easier and easier. So we've really tried hard to take the place the world is going, which is sort of towards devices and services, take all the work that you guys have done in the past and create a nice pathway and bridge and make it as easy as possible to support as many different entry points, types of applications, services, et cetera, as possible. And we're going to continue to do more in that direction. So with that, I'm going to end on saying, hey, it's all about devices and services, but we don't want to lose track of all the great work we've done together. A couple things to try at home. If you haven't played with Visual Studio 2013, you can download it now. For those of you that haven't upgraded to 8.1 yet, please go do that. It's a better experience. If you haven't been to developer.microsoft.com in a while, we've been working hard in there. There's a bunch of new .NET content that we published. We wanted to try and make sure, whether it's WPF or WCF or any of the work we've done over the years, what's going on with 4.5, that we try and give a better roadmap. I got a lot of feedback when I took this role that we'd sort of gone radio silent, so we've tried to publish as much new information out there as possible and get out of radio silence. Building an app from a website, you saw that. Get your free dev test cycles on Azure, which hopefully Scott spoke about yesterday. And with that, I wish you a great conference. Thanks for your time. Have a good time in Vegas.